Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support. Soul Sister Radio.
Welcome to Soul Sister Monday. This is Maria DiGiovanni, and I want to welcome you to Soul Sister Radio. And safety first is Murphy's Law with Tracy Murphy. Tracy, take it away.
Hi. Good evening, everyone. I'm so glad you guys are here. Today, this is safety first. I'm so sorry. This is safety first, Murphy's Law, and I'm Tracy. And we're joined with our co-host, Star Myers from Voices Amplified. Star, are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Great
to be here tonight.
Oh, it's going to be such a good show. I'm so excited. We've been waiting all week, and we've been talking about it all week. And
I know.
Isn't it going to be awesome? So, you know, this is really kind of cool because right now it seems like there's such an explosion going on with the awareness between chronic illness and childhood abuse, traumas, and maltreatment. So tonight on our show, we are having the most awesome guest. Her name is Amy Susan Crone, and Amy herself has gone through just a horrific experience of battling stage 4 cancer and lupus. And through this journey of trying to heal and recover and figure out what's really going on, she has found research studies that actually link chronic illness and disease with childhood maltreatment. So she has written a book called Dying to Live. And the most amazing part about this whole thing is, as everybody knows, that our show was created in honor of Susan Murphy Milano, who passed away last October from cancer. Well, the most amazing part about this is when Susan was sick, we had just found out she was sick, Amy had contacted me and said, "Oh, my gosh, Tracy, I've got to reach this woman. I've got to tell her my story. You know, I've been dealing with this stuff for all these years, and I've been writing a book," and so on and so forth, and then connected the two of them. Since then, the whole experience of Susan has just really kicked into gear the inspiration to finish her book, which she has just published. She just had her first book signing. We are her first interview, and she's going to share with us her journey as well as what she's found in the link between childhood maltreatment and disease. Amy, are you here?
Yes, I am. Thank you for the wonderful introduction.
Well, welcome, Amy. I'm so pleased that you've chosen to come on our show tonight. Do you want to tell everybody about who you are and your a little bit about you?
Okay. Well, I'm gratefully, I'm 52 years old. I'm married, almost 29 years. Have two sons. Divide my time between homes in New York and South Carolina. I was a workaholic type AAA personality for many years in public relations, marketing, journalism, and then was struck down by cancer at age 36.
Wow.
I was diagnosed at the highest stage, 4B. I had a tumor that had grown into my heart and my lung. And at the same time, I was diagnosed with lupus. So I received the dual diagnosis and basically went through a biopsy surgery and it went awry and was pronounced DOA at the hospital.
Unbelievable.
Not long after that.
Is when you were 36, you said?
36. I had two
You had your children that were little?
Yes, they were 6 and 3. And
you're working full-time.
I was working full-time, had my own business, had clients. I was, you know, but I had a doctor. I'm sorry?
Tell us, how did you even cope with that? That just sounds like, you know,
well,
it's like the last thing that you need on your list. You have so much going on, and then all of a sudden you're struck with this.
It was quite a blow. However, there had been signs and symptoms brewing for, I feel, a couple of years at least.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, my family doctor at the time dismissed them as woman's stress, working mother, tired syndrome. And
What were your symptoms that you were experiencing?
I had a constant cough. I had fevers, the night sweats, and which are classic with Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is what I had, and just aches and pains all over. And
The last words he said to me is, you're a normal 36-year-old woman. Go live your life. And I just knew that there something was wrong. And I defied him. We fought. I went to another doctor, and it just so happened to be an endocrinologist because I was checking my thyroid, which had gone awry in the past. And he ordered a simple chest x-ray, and I went up and into the hospital for the x-ray, even with the baby, not even thinking that I couldn't take the baby in for the x-ray, and some technician watched the baby, and
I
went in, and then they said, well, we want to take that picture again, and I still didn't think anything was wrong. I did it, went in, you know, on the phone with clients, taking care of the baby, and I got home, and I got a phone call, and they said, no, you need to see somebody, and I said, what? And they said, well, there's something on your x-ray that, you know, doesn't look right, and enough, within weeks, I was on an operating room table and diagnosed with the highest stage of cancer, and then having an emergency tracheotomy because I couldn't breathe anymore. And like I said,
was that a complication that added to the surgery, the tracheotomy?
It was a complication from the surgery because of the lupus. My body was basically. My body was the loop. My body's autoimmune system, or my immune system, went into such overdrive to try to contain this tumor and try to contain this growing cancer that I just exploded, literally. And when they got me to the trauma center, the doctor who performed the tracheotomy said I had a pinhole left to breathe. So so it was quite an ordeal, but what came out of that, and then there was a year of torture, as they promised me from Sloan Kettering, which I appreciate because they were truthful, and I write all about this in my book. I had to come to terms with why, what, when, where, how, and who. Who was I?
Right.
You know, and how did I get there?
Well, now that's really interesting. So that part, that's the acceptance and figuring out who you are. Who inspired you or influenced you to go that direction? Because, you know, there's so many different directions that a person could go. You could either just sit in the worry and go that direction, or you can go start researching and educating yourself, which sounds like what you did.
Well, I think I was angry. I was very, very angry. I was angry at the doctor who missed the diagnosis, not a misdiagnosis. He missed it completely, over his head. And I even confronted him at one point, but that's also in the book and a long story. But But I was also angry. I was angry. I realized that, you know, here I had worked so hard for so many years to overcome the things that had happened in my childhood, and I thought that I had effectively sealed them away or filed them away, and that they weren't going to affect me anymore, because I distinctly recall having suffered a serious illness when I was 18, I had mononucleosis, but ended up in the hospital with it because I had nobody to take care of me. And I just remember at that time saying to myself, I'm not going to let what happened the first 18 years of my life dictate the rest of my life.
Right.
So I basically walled off everything that had occurred in my childhood. And when you are going through near-death experiences like I did, and the traditional ones where you're floating on the ceiling and you're looking down at your body and, you know, you see your life flash before your eyes, I kept revisiting my childhood and laying in those hospital beds and laying in ICU and laying with a respirator and tied up to all these tubes and being barely conscious and sometimes thinking I was hallucinating. I kept returning to things from my past in my own thoughts. So it wasn't a conscious effort. I think it just naturally occurred.
Using your subconscious.
Exactly. And
then the power above, God always leads us, and that higher spirit or power obviously was there.
Exactly. And I had some experiences with God directly, and I would talk to my pastor and say, that didn't happen, and he'd say, why not? I'd say, because I don't believe in that.
He'd say, really?
Oh, yes. I will tell you, but what I just wanted to finish up by saying is that I had encased myself in so much armor mm-hmm. over the years, and this explosion, this tumor in my heart of not in another place, just blew that armor off. So I was just a quivering, quaking baby and didn't know where to begin. So you want to know about the actual spiritual experiences?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The first happened when they were manically working on me in the emergency room when I was brought in and just blew up and couldn't breathe. And I went to the ceiling, the corner of the ceiling, that whole traditional experience where they say, you know, you look down and you see yourself and you see the light. And I was totally at peace, and I could see the back of my husband's head, and he was throwing his body on mine saying, oh, no, Amy, my soulmate, my soulmate. And I saw the nurses' faces, and I saw them working on me. And I just, up there, I said, oh, I have to get back to Will. I have to, because his own mother died when she was 36. And I said, I can't do this to him. And if you believe in fate bringing people together, and, you know, there was a time when I was saying, okay, this happened because my husband, Will, had to heal from his mother dying at age 36. So he had to go through this experience, and I had to live. Well, thank you very much. But I kind of discarded that after a while. But for a while, I was pretty angry at him. But anyway.
Right. Well, if you believe
souls are brought together, you know, to heal each other. And so I did zoom back to the table, but only didn't feel anything, just basically said goodbye to him and told him to say goodbye
to
my children. Yes. And went kind of through a tunnel and sounded like thunderous noise, and I was on the table, but I did not physically feel my body. I only whispered to him, and I said, I love you, and say goodbye to my, I'm going to start to cry. I said, say goodbye, too, and I mentioned my two sons' name for me, and I said goodbye. And I wanted to go back. I wanted to go back to where I was, and when I woke up, wherever I was later, I was hooked up to numerous tubes and machines and, you know, and didn't know what was going on, and my eyes were swollen shut, so I couldn't see anything. I couldn't speak, and I really was angry because everything hurt, and I wanted to go back to God and go back to heaven or wherever He was taking me. But some weeks later, I had what they called my first chemo wipeout, where basically, you know, chemotherapy kills not only the bad cells, but the good ones.
Okay.
And if your body doesn't rejuvenate its white blood cells or platelets on its own, you will die. And I had at least three experiences, what they call chemo wipeout. And thank God, my body did respond. But during one of those times, I was just so near death.
Mm-hmm.
I screamed and kicked and yelled that this did not happen. But I had a black diamond shape appear to me, and then in through it there was Jesus. And the image that we know of Jesus, obviously, nobody really knows what Jesus looks like, but because in our conscious mind we have that picture. And he was sitting there, and he had sheep around him, and he put my head in his lap, and he laid I always think of it like one of those Christmas tree skirts that are made of like like foam and sparkly, you know?
Oh, yeah.
He laid a blanket over me, and he put my head in his lap, and he said, "You're going to be okay. You're going to be okay." And
that's amazing.
And that was extraordinary. And then, of course, I didn't believe it. And then much later, I read a book on the 23rd Psalm and understood what the sheep were all about, and you know, how sheep can't survive without the shepherd, and you know that Jesus has to help us along, and the sheep were there to represent that, I believe.
Or maybe like your children, and you.
Yeah, and I had some other experiences with a guardian angel, and you know, there were some things that were inexplicable, and until I did a lot of reading and had many discussions with my pastor and others, I finally came to accept it as a wonderful gift.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So it was right there in front of your face. And what would you say, it was the anger that was holding me back from believing and seeing? I mean, that it
was the anger, the skeptical child, the person who didn't trust, the person mm-hmm. who was wounded, the person who just was still saying, "Why did this happen to me? And why did I deserve this? And why me?" And again, you say, "Why not me? You know, if not me, it would have been somebody else."
Well,
and
right.
I just...
The power behind what you're saying is it's explosive. It is such an amazing awareness that the anger that you were holding was actually holding you back.
It was, and it made me ill. And, you know, the repressed memories and the repressed recollections of what had gone on throughout my childhood. And my childhood was not one of what people would typically call child abuse, and that's why I like to use maltreatment, because it was mostly neglect, emotional neglect, and living with a mentally ill parent, and you know, missing 60 days of school in 1 year because I was so afraid to leave home because I didn't know what I would find when I came back, and tremendous I hate this word, but tremendous dysfunction, and you know, just always being scared, and
right.
It was
maybe toxicity for a word. Instead of dysfunction, I don't know.
Yeah.
I understand what you mean about the certain words that you don't like to use.
Yeah, well, they're so hackneyed and are just used so casually now. You know,
right.
I mean, everybody can
right.
say they have some dysfunction in their family.
Right.
But you know, when you look at the adverse childhood effects study that's being done by the CDC and being carried on, you know, it's clear that. You know, they say that 64% of the population scores at least a 1, if not more, on the adverse childhood effects survey.
And
or,
that's ACE?
Go ahead.
The ACE survey?
The ACE study, yeah, the ACE study.
That was an amazing study. Let's talk about that for just a second so people understand
mm-hmm.
what it is.
Right. It's, The adverse childhood effects study was started by the CDC, I believe, about 20 years ago. That's the Centers for Disease Control. It's a federally funded study. However, there are other studies. I found researchers in New Zealand and Australia and others around the country who are doing similar work that
uh-huh.
distinctly show that those who can point to certain adverse experiences in their childhood have biological, physiological changes in their body, chemistry and biology that causes or can cause adult physical and mental illness. So there is proof that there is cause and effect. And I did not learn that until I was doing research for my book. And that was my aha moment. And I do believe that what I suppressed, repressed, or chose to file away and seal away and suit myself up with armor is what caused me to explode at age 36. And others may not believe it, but that is something I do believe, and I think that the science is leading in that direction more and more to help children and to help others who become ill as adults understand the wiring or how they were hardwired as children to have their immune systems become compromised.
Right, right. Well, you know, it seems there's so much study now that is going on, and they are finding out these links of illnesses. And what I've discovered, and really it's really interesting that you were explaining the progression before you realized what was happening to you.
Right.
And I kind of feel like I'm in that category right now of a place because, one, I've experienced, you know, life-threatening trauma. And through the years, I've been trying to heal. I've been doing I am healing. I know I'm healing, and I believe I'm healing. But I'm having a lot of medical issues. And I'm finding that I'm going to the doctor for many different reasons. I've been diagnosed. I have a severe spine injury from one of the incidents, which
right.
was an infection. And that infection lived in my body for a long time as I was misdiagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time I was admitted into the hospital, my organs were shutting down. I was barely even conscious, and I didn't know what was going on. And I had a very similar experience of going away and not knowing what's going to happen with my kids and being so worried, saying, no, I'm not going to let this happen. I can't die. My kids need me. And somehow I pulled back. When that happened, which was several years ago, there was a lot of other traumas and stuff. And even though I wanted to heal, and as badly as I tried to heal, I couldn't. I kept finding myself in other, you know, bad situations. And so what I'm trying to say out of that is when you're in trauma and when you can't heal and you really can't start that healing process until you're away from the trauma. And so for me, what I've noticed is now that I've been away from all the abuse and traumas, I'm having these medical issues. And
yes.
So, of course, I have my spine injury, which is a problem. And then I've got a couple other little, you know, aches and pains and issues. So I've been seeing the doctor and the therapist and all this stuff, and I was recently diagnosed with fibromyalgia.
Yes.
Now, what I'm finding is how many abuse survivors are suffering from fibromyalgia and other chronic illnesses, not necessarily stage 4 cancer, but
right.
they are having these signs and symptoms, you know, just me. On that note, that's a very powerful point, because when you're experiencing all these things and you're not understanding what is really going on with you, that is the time to be educating yourself. That is the time to be really figuring out what's going on inside of you, just like what you were explaining, that
right.
until you started understanding that it was the childhood traumas, you know, you kept flashing back to your childhood, it was giving you you were getting little, like, signposts saying, this is it, this is it, this is where the issue is. And I think that people can really prevent themselves from further illness by starting that healing process, by accepting it, understanding it, and then moving forward. So with that, how did you go about the healing of everything? Because
oh, boy.
When
it
you were
was
in
a...
the trauma, you couldn't figure it out. But after
right.
you know, you were stable, your health was stable.
It was 3 years of psychotherapy with an alternative practitioner, not a traditional practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
So someone who let me sit in her space and hit a punching bag with a bat.
Wow.
Someone who let me put foam rubber things up and pretend they were my mother and yell at her. Someone who let me do past life regressions and did hypnosis and did massage and let me just scream and cry and get it out. Of course, we talked at length, but the physicality of what she taught me and letting the energy, letting the bad energy get out of your body, and there are techniques, mm-hmm. and this therapy that I chose and that I used is called core energetics. And there is
core energetics.
There is an institute in New York City, and people who practice this this type of therapy, and I forget who the founder of it is, have to go through 5 years of training. So it's not a fly-by-night kind of therapy, and it was covered by my insurance. And that, to me, was tremendously healing. I tried support groups, but they didn't work for me at that time.
Interesting. I'm looking it up right now, the core energetics.
Yes.
And let's see, radicals.
Now, while you're looking that up, let's go to break. And
okay.
We'll hear from the sponsors, and we'll come back, and you can look that up at that time.
Sounds okay. Great. All right. Thank you. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are we okay?
Maria?
Or
is that Star?
Yes, yeah, that's Star.
Star, I'm thrilled
Star
to
there?
Talk to you.
Hi, I'm here.
Actually, hello. The computer is stuck, so hold on 1 second. Are you there? Can you hear
yes.
me?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's Maria from Soul Sister Radio. Thank you so much, Star. You're doing a great job. And yes, we've had nothing but technical difficulties in the background, Tracy. It was God's timing, the timing of the show. So I'm sorry about this. The computer got stuck on me over here. So let's take a commercial break. And it has been a blessing listening to this show. So I just wanted to give you a holler. So here we go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Soul Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the Advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support. Soul Sister Radio.
You're on.
Hello? Okay, we're back. You know, I really wanted to get into, Amy, if you're still, are you there with us?
Oh, yes.
Let's talk about your book. You know, we got so carried away talking about the whole research and everything, and we know it's there, but let's talk about your book, because you were inspired when Susan was ill to finish up your book and get it out there. So
Susan Murphy Milano, God rest her soul. I did know her before I met you, but you did make another connection. So we had done actually some work together. And when she became ill, she called me because she knew I had suffered with stage 4 cancer.
Okay.
And we stayed in touch throughout the time that she could stay in touch. I got angry again. And I had been working on my book for 4 years. It was another part of the healing process for me. It was another catharsis to get it all out. And when she became so ill and I knew that she was going to pass, I vowed to her that I was going to finish that book.
Oh, wow.
And that's what I did. And I finished it, and it's out there.
And not long. I mean, not long at all.
No, I mean, you know, 4 years on and off, and but always in my head.
In the last 6 months, it's done.
I got it done, and I just said, "This is it. I'm doing it." And
if that's not your higher power, I don't know what is.
And I just know that she is dancing up there and with glee, listening to this show, and I am. So very grateful to have known her and had her in my life. And she's a powerful force behind all of us and all the good works that we're trying to do. And that's what I'm trying to do with my book. I want to help other people. And it sounds so trite, but it's the truth. I mean, I became a foster mother because I wanted to help children, a child who, you know, needed help. It would have been more children if I hadn't gotten sick. I want to become a CASA volunteer, a court-appointed special advocate, to help children who are in the foster care system so they don't have to get sick when they're adults.
Right.
I mean, I hope with this book, and anybody who's suffering from chronic illness or knows someone who's suffering from it or has suffered from it or childhood trauma, whatever, what the reviews I've gotten so far from those who've read it are that it really is across the board, and that makes me very, very grateful that, you know, that there is
a necessary book.
There's a thread that runs through it that's applicable to almost anyone's situation at any given
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is funny, too. I mean, it's, you know, I talk about my crazy childhood, and it was Meshuggah. It was crazy. I didn't even know I was Jewish until I was 13, you know, and then I married an Italian, and then my sister married an Italian. I sent my mother a Mother's Day card in Italian. I figured, why not, you know? I mean, and then being the great niece of Burl Crohn, who discovered Crohn's disease, that just added a whole other dimension, you know. Luckily,
that whole dynamic.
Yeah, and luckily I was able to tap into, you know, some of the family connections to get some superior health care.
Interesting.
Although not always. I mean, it took me, I went through 13 rheumatologists before I found one that I could work with.
Interesting.
And, yeah. So, you know, it's a process, and it's in the book I also give advice to patients, you know, people who are chronically ill and as patients, and I even put a sample letter in there that they should give to their doctors, you know, to work with them. Because there's so much that doctors can benefit from this book tremendously. And I also have some of my number one doctors who are selling the book in their offices, and they're selling out.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, not many, but they're selling.
Amy's book is titled Dying to Live, and you can find it on Amazon, right?
The full title is Dying to Live, Running Backwards Through Cancer, Lupus, and Chronic Illness, because there are several other books that start with the prefix Dying to Live, but I didn't care.
Okay. Good. Well, Running Backwards Through Cancer and Lupus, what an incredible title.
And
it all right there.
It had many other titles, but that one stuck. And I had a wonderful editor. And, you know, now it's just time to get it out there. And hopefully I want feedback. I'm trying to master this social media marketing, which is just like the bane of my existence right now. Even being a marketer all these years, it's still giving me trouble.
Well, it's all different now.
Yeah, but, you know, I...
with technology.
Google Plus and Google Circles is killing me. So if anyone out there can help me with that, I would appreciate it. But, you know, I've been blogging for 2 years. I have a blog that people can get to through my website, too. And I just...
Can you tell us your blog name, and we'll put it in the chat room so people can...
It's also called... it's at Dying to Live Amy... .blogspot.com, I think. But if they go to my website, www.dyingtoliveamy, they can get to it right there.
I put it in it's in the chat room. Now, while I've got you, we have a caller. Patrick has a question for Amy. Okay,
sure.
Can you put him on, Maria?
Hello?
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 Yes.
Hi there.
Hello. I'm glad to be a part of the discussion. And the reason why I'm calling is because I appreciate the conversation that, you know, you young sisters are having at this time. And I've been a part of a lot of conversations on Blog Talk Radio that have pretty much gone out of control. But I had a profound conversation today where I tried to tap into something, because I brought in to a conversation about the legislation on the Supreme Court ushering in abortion. And you guys might feel like this is not even part of the discussion, but I think it's very apparent. And the reason why I'm calling in is because what I told this person is that when we look at the figures, the prominent figures in humanity, when we look at Columbia.
Excuse me, Patrick?
Yes.
I don't mean to be rude or anything, but this show, we're focusing on Amy's book and illnesses. And if you'd like, I can find you a blog talk show that focuses on your legislature, but we kind of try to stay away from politics.
Hello?
Hello. Amy, are you still there?
I'm here.
I think we lost our caller.
Well,
okay.
I guess we have a different agenda.
Sorry, I didn't find
it. Seemed like it was a little off topic.
Yes. So let's get back to Amy's blog, which I posted in the chat room for everyone. And I also posted your free chapter on my page, and when we're off the show, I'll pass that around so that everyone can read the chapter there. She's got a free chapter. You can read that and see if you like the book and purchase it. But I think it's a bestseller, must read.
Oh, thank
you.
And it will be on Kindle within a week.
I'm excited.
Yeah. And people are asking me for other e-readers or digital readers. And with Kindle, you have a six-month contract that it's only on Kindle. So after that, I can start making it available through Smashwords or other digital readers. So I have my work cut out for me, but I really... look forward to the book signings and people's feedback is what I was talking about. You know,
right.
Go on the blog and leave me comments. Send me emails. I've put my email on my website. I want to hear what people are thinking and saying and talking about this topic, because I really, really, I've aligned myself with several organizations that are doing children's advocacy, and that's where I'm going with this. And
right.
I want to hear what people are saying or thinking.
What about, have you heard of the lamplighters?
I have heard of them, yes.
And they just posted a great blog. Star, do you remember Marjorie?
Yes.
And it goes into this, and that would be a great connection for you on Facebook and the social media.
Okay, I'll have to check. I think they're on my list. I have a list.
Yeah.
It's long.
I work with the lamplighters, and we have, I don't know how many chapters at this point. I keep getting emails all over the world now, and we do meetings. If you want to do them online with people in your community or whatever, then you're free to do that. But, yeah.
Okay, what was the last article? What I was thinking about that she had written, and she goes into the links between the mouth treatment as children and adulthood.
Yes, she talks about
there's
how childhood abuse causes illnesses, and it also takes time off your life, which is, again, what our guest last week, Barry Goldstein, had said. That's in his
right.
Well,
so Amy, this topic seems to be a topic.
Yeah.
It's so important, and your book is so important for everybody. And like you said, it doesn't have to be abuse. It really is any sort of childhood traumas that will affect your health later in life if you're not able to figure this out and do what you need to do to heal.
And, my own family, I mean, I was the youngest in a blended family, if you will, and my oldest sister is 18 years older than me, and she was in college when I was born, and, you know, when she read a draft of the book, she said, I didn't know. And the thing is that as children, we don't know either. We don't know there's something wrong. So we don't say anything.
That's right. And that's exactly it is. If you don't know, if you don't have the awareness, you can't do anything about it.
Right. And young children certainly don't.
No.
And they need, go ahead.
On that note, that's a really interesting topic because we had a guest, Barry Goldstein, on, and he was discussing how the court professionals in the legal system, the family court system, they really need to be aware of this and have this education because they're experiencing, you know, these families right now, and these children are being taken and put in the wrong hands, and they're not understanding what it's going to cause to these children later on in life.
That's what I hope. Yeah, when I'm trained as a pastoral volunteer, that I can help in that area and bring what I've learned into that arena too. And that's what always. I mean, I start one thing and then I end up doing something else, and I don't even know what the second follow-up book is going to be about. But that's what I believe God will tell me in time, and the readers of the book and the people who react to the book will guide me towards.
That's right.
I know there's a follow-up book, and I just need to get a focus, and then I know it'll just pour out of me.
Well, it's all in motion right now, as I see it, and you're going to bring so much awareness to the world with your story, and really, like you just said too, it's going to help the children, and we got to start somewhere, and it may not happen, you know, this minute. But it takes a generation or so, and if we start educating people now, these children, we can prevent them from having these illnesses.
Well, I'll just tell you something funny.
Ladies,
go ahead. Yes.
We have a few callers online, ladies.
Oh, excellent.
But, the first one is Sherry. Can you patch her through, Maria?
Sherry, go ahead.
Hello, Sherry.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I have a question. It kind of goes back to what Amy was just saying about her older sister. But what I was wondering was, can only one child in a family of, say, four or six be affected and the others not be affected, or do they just not admit it?
That's an excellent question.
It is,
Amy?
And I think that, yes, one child can be affected because, well, let me put it this way, in my family, and which is the only one I can speak to, I feel that two of my siblings, my half-siblings, could not recover from what happened. I think because I was the youngest and the only child of my two parents, where my other siblings were halves, I was able to detach from my mother at a very young age. I knew by the time I was 3 years old that I had to stay away from her in order to survive. My father was better, but not great. But I got something that gave me the strength to not let my mom pull me into this quicksand that she had created because of her own mental illness. I've forgiven her. I pitied her. I sat with her many times before she passed away. But one of the very last things she said to me is, I said, "Mom, you know what you are?" I didn't even know what my answer was going to be. And she said, "Yes, I'm a black widow spider. I eat my young."
Oh, my goodness.
So the fact that my sisters and brothers didn't experience the experience I had as the youngest, yes, I do think that one child can be affected. Two children can be, and others won't be. And others just refuse to be. I think I kind of refused to be. Although I was affected, I didn't admit that I was being affected, but I was being affected subconsciously.
Right,
And it came out later as severe illness.
So all affected differently.
Yes.
Exactly. So would you say that every child has different ways of reacting, although they're being affected the same, it's how they react, whether they act out or they hold it in?
It's how they cope. And but I mean, you hear, I had court officers at one point when I was involved with something with my dad, against my dad, saying to me, "Why aren't you a drug addict? You know, why aren't you in the streets? Why aren't you, you know, doing this?" And I just looked at them like, "Huh?" Like, it never occurred to me. But unfortunately, I have, another sibling who did go that route. And
that's what he expected to happen for you.
Yeah. And, so I don't know what makes the difference. But I'm sure there's some researcher trying to figure it out.
Right.
Now, we have another caller in.
Hey.
Kathleen. Maria,
hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi,
you guys.
Hello.
I'm really sorry I didn't catch the first half of the show because of the technical difficulties I was having. Amy, I'm 45 and I was raised in a very dysfunctional family.
Yes.
And I have a lot of medical problems. And
yes.
I'm wondering the detaching process for me right now is very overwhelming because it's so toxic.
Yes.
I'm on disability and everything, but how did you find yourself being able to detach yourself emotionally? And I'm really interested in hearing more about, reading your book, and the awareness that Tracy was talking about. The healthcare professionals, I find, really need to be educated in this childhood, the trauma that we experience as children. And, I'll be going to the doctor here pretty soon and being explaining to them that I was a product of trauma. And the healthcare professionals, I don't know if you agree with this, but they're really not educated in.
No, they're not. And they want to prescribe the latest pharmaceutical, and they want to treat the symptoms. And now, having been a professional patient for almost 15 years, or it is 15 years, you know, I'm starting to revolt a little bit because I'm having side effects from these medications, and we're just adding medications upon medications. Then I'm looking into alternatives for what I call the last third of my life to make it better, because I expect to still be here and I want to be here. But in my book, I do have a letter that I drafted that I suggest people give to their doctors when they first meet them. And I also, at this point, I go into physicians. You have to work with physicians, and you have to understand now that they are strapped to the max. And I'll answer your other question after about the detachment. But so when I go in with a complete medical history typed out in chronological order. I go in with a paper that has all my medications, my dosages. It has all my doctor's names and their phone numbers. And I say to them, this is the first time I'm meeting a new doctor, I say, look, I have a very complicated medical history and I have a complicated childhood history. If you're willing to take me on, great. If you're not, tell me now. I will not be offended. I will not be hurt. I will go elsewhere. But you will need a lot of time to work with me effectively.
That's a great approach.
And
that's a great approach. I agree.
And some of them are honest with me, and they say, you know, this just isn't my specialty. I don't have the time. And I say, fine. Thank you very much. Goodbye. I have had others. I had an experience a year and a half ago. I went to a new GI doctor, and I gave my spiel, and he said, oh, no, come on in, come on in. Well, after 6 or 7 minutes in his office, he says, boy, you're a bucket full of problems, aren't you? And he said, I'm gonna send you to so-and-so, but don't tell her I sent you because she'll be mad at me. And, you know, and I just gathered up my papers. I didn't cry this time because I used to cry. And I said the proverbial F you, and I said, see ya, and, you know, goodbye, and walked out. But I gave him a piece of my mind. But I'm able to do that now. When you're vulnerable and you're sick, it's so hard to do. And if you can't do it yourself, you have to have someone do it for you.
Yeah,
you have to have an advocate with you.
I think that's
very
important.
Now we have another caller.
Okay.
As well, Charles. Can we patch him through?
Charles,
hello?
Are you there?
Yes, I'm
Hi,
here.
Charles.
How are you? Hey, this
Good.
Is Charles
Becker
from Philadelphia. I'm doing well.
Nice.
Amy, I've been listening to you and so many different things. We're actually connected on Facebook as well.
Yes,
but,
nice to meet
so many
you,
different
Charles.
Things. Yeah, so many different things. This mirror, I was listening and earlier in the show, we were talking about that ACE, and I had actually just done mine for the first time this week.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I scored a whopping 8. You know, I was going
for
perfect.
Yeah, isn't that the highest?
And I got 8.
Isn't that the highest? Isn't 8 the highest?
10 is the highest.
10 is the highest. Oh, I was a 4,
yeah.
Which, you know.
Yeah,
wow.
But I want to say I congratulate you because I'm hearing, you know, the different things of can so mirror some of the things I've heard you talking about in the essence of going to places and trying to look for help and calling you a too much for them or you, why aren't you a drug addict? I used to hear that all the time. Why aren't you a drug addict? Why aren't you an alcoholic? Why aren't you in prison?
Right.
And I'm like, well, I'm glad I'm not who you wanted me to be. You know?
Right.
And I think that's some of what also may have motivated you, people like us. You were talking about studies as well, and it's one of the things I've been trying to find. I recently was blessed with the opportunity to speak with Antoine Fisher, and we're trying to find somebody to study folks like you, Amy, like myself, that have been able to take the negativity in our lives and not let it control our lives.
Right.
And they can find whatever that is that we have. That's what I'd love to do. I'd love to find whatever it is that we have so we can give it to other people so maybe we can stop this whole line of abuse right before
that's
it starts.
That's right.
Yes,
oh, my God. That's so powerful.
And just to mention, I only have quote-unquote, met Charles recently through Facebook connections and networking, and he is, your group is called Charlie's Angels, I believe.
Yeah,
I love it.
I have two different organizations. I have Charlie's Angels, which is my inspirational speaking company. I'm Charlie the Angel, is my brother that was murdered in front of me. He's the original angel. And then we've added all the other angels along. So, and then I'm the founder and director of the International Child Abuse Prevention Task Force. But this show isn't about me and what I'm doing. It's about Amy, what God and her and the higher power in her life is doing. And I didn't call in to advertise me. I call in to congratulate and to encourage Amy to keep going. And we're out here to support you. And anything I can do, you let me know.
Oh, well, thank
Charles,
you. And that's
so wonderful.
And through, but my connecting with Charles, again, whether it be through a higher power or whatever, together and with Voices with Star, with Voices Amplified, and with Soul Sister Radio, and with Tracy Murphy, and with Maria DiGiuliano, because I said it wrong, but we can all, you know, we are a force to be reckoned with, and
yes.
we are making things happen.
Absolutely.
There's Jane LaMonda Alvarez, who has the Children's Wall of Tears, and, you know...
She's a wonderful dear friend of mine as well.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm thrilled to be starting to work with these people.
Well,
I
want to get off the line and put the show back in you ladies' hands, but I just want to say this, Amy, if you haven't heard yet, in 2014, April 1st, I'm stepping off on a 50-state...
Every
capital in the country... starting April 1st of next year, and when I come to your state, I'd love to have you come on out and speak at the Capitol. If you are close, we'll come. Okay, and we're.
Oh, I know where Albany is. I'll be there.
Okay,
oh, wonderful.
Okay.
So that's where, and then the year after, we're doing a world tour. I'm dedicating a full year of my life to travel the world to get the voices heard. So back to your show, ladies. I don't want to advertise myself, but thank you so much for giving me the time to come on. I look forward to working with each and every one of you to fight crimes against our children, and keep doing what you're doing, Amy. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you.
Be blessed, Amy.
Now, just to let you guys know, we do have extra time tonight, so the show will be extended because of the interest in Amy's book and the questions.
Nice.
Yay. That's great. So we have more callers? I love callers.
Yeah, do we have any more callers?
I'm a chicken.
Let's take
I know
it.
You know what I wanted to talk about is Kathleen's question, when she had mentioned about the detachment, and I know we're a little bit out there, but, you know, she is listening. And let's see if we can answer her question for her about the detachment.
Well, I think she, because she missed the first part of the show, that was a little bit of it, but... again, there. As I said, I was, you know, I don't know where the strength came from, other than from God or from higher power. But I just decided that my parents and my family life was not going to dictate the rest of my life, and I was 18 years old when that happened, laying in a hospital bed. Once again, with a very bad case of mononucleosis, and neither of my parents would take me in and take care of me. And I had nowhere to go, and I just, I don't know. I just then and there said, that's it. And I had to cut them out of my lives for quite a number of years. And it wasn't until my first son was born that I actually reintroduce myself to them, and I talk about this a great deal in the book, but it was on my terms. You know, when I got married, my father didn't walk me down the aisle. I walked myself with my head held high. He didn't deserve
any
honor.
Yeah, I love that. That's what I'm talking about.
And, you know, I go back to that anger, you know, which may have been the wrong emotion for me to have, but it is what sustained me and got me through so much.
I don't know if it's the wrong emotion.
Yeah, I don't know how to describe it either, but it was the emotion that propelled me and kept me going, and the sheer will to become somebody and to grow up despite them or in spite of them. To say to myself that I could be something even though they were trying to prevent me in so many ways.
Right, and you just kept fighting on.
Yeah.
And so when you said that you had to disconnect from them? Do you mean like no contact?
No contact. I didn't speak to my father for 10 years. My mother I didn't live with from the time I was 14 on, and we had very sporadic contact, and I recall finding out some things. Yeah, my mother and I were not close. There was not a connection like I had with my dad. The pain of being without my dad for those years was much, much harder for me than the pain of being without my mom.
But though healthier for you.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't have done it any other way. And I didn't know how to do it any other way because I had to survive. And
right.
I just barreled through, full of anxiety, having anxiety attacks all over, developing phobias, you know, I mean, just, you know, trying and trying and trying, but I don't know. I just kept trying. And, go ahead.
Now we have one more caller, ladies and gentlemen. I believe that's Donna Gore.
Oh, Donna.
She's on the line.
Yay,
yes.
Donna. Welcome.
Hey, thank you very much.
I'm glad you called in.
Thank you. Well, it's my pleasure. I just wanted to call in to, number one, congratulate Amy. She's doing such a stellar job in promoting her book and being such a wonderful advocate and a fine friend to me and so many people. And we have many commonalities because I'm also a professional patient with my own medical history. And something that rings true throughout and something that we have talked about quite a bit on my own radio show, Shattered Life, is resiliency and post-traumatic growth. And I think, Amy, what you were just alluding to, how you just continually persevere and despite whatever the challenge is and detaching and whatever way you're coping, how do you, you know, can you talk a bit about how resilient you were and was it a building process from the beginning? You just felt stronger and stronger as you developed your means of coping and escaping from the dysfunction?
You know, I think I was just born this way. I was a tough little broad.
Me too.
I don't know. I just, you know, from the time I was little, I was the one that would fight the bullies on the playground. Mm-hmm. I was very creative, and I resorted to solace in the arts quite a bit. I drew, I painted, I played instruments, I wrote, I always wrote, I read, I buried myself in books, I became, you know, very attached to animals and was taking care of animals. I mean, I just found other outlets
mm-hmm.
for the comfort that I wasn't getting and the nurturing, and I think I just, God cut me from a piece of cloth that just said,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're an old soul, and I'm sending you back to Earth to do this.
Wow.
And if it was to heal my husband from his trauma of his mother passing when she was 36 and I got sick at 36 and almost died, well, then so be it.
Mm-hmm.
If it was to now educate others about what's going on with childhood maltreatment and how it directly connects to adult physical illness, so be it. I don't know. And I don't think any of us really can know. We just have to listen to God and that higher voice. And in those quiet times when those of us who are professional patients, particularly those who are struck with autoimmune diseases like lupus and fibromyalgia, where we have to lay in bed quietly because we can't function for days. I mean, if I overexert myself for a couple of days, I'm flat on my back. And
that's
I just
right.
have time to think and listen and just take in the messages that are coming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you also have to be the consummate problem solver all the time to, you know, it was so intelligent of you to find these other outlets and to be able to find that comfort or else you would not have survived. And you
that's
know
right.
that this is so impressive and You know, I don't know many people that would have figured that out other than Susan Murphy Milano. You know, you have a lot in common with her, Amy.
Yeah, but unfortunately, Susan didn't live. And I have a great deal of survivor's guilt over the people that I've lost over these years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there are many people who I've seen leave this earth from cancer or from lupus or at far too young ages. And it saddens me so much, and it makes me question again, why am I here, still here? And
you have a message. Well, there's a
You know, and to hear Charles call in and say, I'm going to speak in Albany, that's like, great, I can tell people, you know, about this. But I'd never really, you don't understand the value of what you have to say until you say it.
Mm-hmm.
And until I finish this book, I really, you know, I kept saying, who wants to know my story? I think we kind of all say that.
Well, we're too close to it, and then when other people see it, they can be more objective, and then you see the value.
Right. So that's been what's been propelling me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's coming tomorrow. I don't know when the next axe is going to fall. I don't know when the next test is going to show a hot spot. You know, I don't know,
right.
But it doesn't matter.
No.
Did you say
one day at a time?
That's
all we can do.
That's right.
Well,
thank you, Donna.
I wanted to make those comments, and it's a pleasure, and we're very proud of you. So
you
all have a good evening, and I'll say goodbye for now and listen. Okay?
Thank you, Donna. Now we have another caller. We have Margaret.
Yay. Oh, Margaret. Nice. Margaret is an amazing woman. I know her. She's actually a personal friend of mine, and Margaret was diagnosed with stage 3 cancer, esophageal
mm-hmm.
cancer.
Okay.
And she is now, a few years later, cancer-free.
Excellent.
But she had to go through the same thing, process as you. Margaret, are you there?
Yes, I am, Tracy, and it's such a delight to see you grow and grow and grow. And I'm very impressed, and I'm very honored to be on the radio with you girls.
Well, Margaret, tell us a little bit about your experience, because you did experience cancer and as well had a really tough childhood and upbringing with a lot of abuse and issues. Would you want to share a little bit?
I sure would, but I do have a question for you. I wanted to ask Anne. What's her name?
Amy.
Amy. I've been looking on your profile because you just accepted my friend request. Trying to get to know you before I talk to you online. I haven't read your book, but I'm very interested. I do suffer from ADHD, so it's hard for me to actually sit down and read a book. But what I want
to
ask,
I'll have to have an audio version soon.
Oh, that would be fabulous. I want to know, I've always had anger issues because, as Tracy mentioned, I do have some childhood issues, pretty severe.
Yes.
And I am so mean. I'm just mean. And I
mean with
the most
heart,
people that I love the most.
I am
in therapy.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I wonder if you experienced, it's not really, well, I don't know if it's hatred or just angry because I had to go through that because my, the hole that they brought my stomach up to and sutured to be my newest self.
Oh my God.
It's absolutely amazing.
Oh,
but I had a really hard time because the scar tissue kept closing it up, and I lost 70 pounds in 12 weeks.
Oh, please, the anger
that
I
started out 170, very fat and happy.
Yeah.
And I had breasts and everything. And now I'm as skinny as a mini, and I knew there was a size 3 underneath all that love.
Yeah.
But I always
did. Out of the blue, a couple of years ago, I developed gastroparesis, which is a paralysis of the vagus nerve in your stomach, and I could not digest food or evacuate without medication. And it's just now starting to turn around with some of the new alternative treatments, functional and integrative treatments that I'm using. And, you know, but yeah, I lost a whole bunch of weight, and Yeah, you get angry. You know, it's like I ran out of an operating room bay once and ripped the IV out and said, I'm not doing this again. You know, because every time I went in for a PT scan, with a PET scan, something would light up. And I'd go in for the biopsy and it would be nothing. And I just said, I've had it. You know, and sometimes you just have to take a break.
Where are you from, Amy? You sound just like my sister-in-law.
I grew up in New York, in the New York tri-state area, about 30 miles outside of Manhattan.
Jersey. She's from Jersey. I think, no, maybe she's from New York, but she lives, yeah, okay, her and my brother having problems.
A Jersey girl. But, you know, yeah, I mean, anger is, you know, sometimes it's a great, I think it's a great emotion to have because it spurs you to do something. You know, and when I ripped that IV out and the anesthesiologist was like, well, you asked for me and, you know, now you're doing this and I came here especially just for you. And I said, I don't care.
I know. I went postal on my oncologist when I was 95 pounds in gray. I was severely malnourished. I mean, that's a lot of weight. My hair started growing fur on it. And I screamed and yelled and this poor lady was from India or whatever, she's like, oh, my patients don't act like this. This isn't normal for my patient. I go, well, they're not 95 pounds and about to just dwindle into nothing, blow away.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't eat more than a Jell-O serving thing a day.
I was eating baby food, and I was down to 90 pounds. I mean, it was awful. But, I had an incident once when I was in the chemo ward at the hospital, and you know, every time I had chemo, something went wrong, and I was in isolation, and they brought me a food tray with a rancid thing of juice on it, and I drank it.
Now, they're
trying to keep me, you know, isolated and away from all germs and away from all this.
And it was sour.
It was rancid. I knocked that tray off that table. I started screaming and yelling. All the nurses came running. My oncologist was there. She came running. What's wrong? What's wrong? And I said, you tell me I can't have it. You bring me this. You know, yeah, you got to yell. I was yelling at my pastor. I was yelling at everybody.
No. Well, I'll tell you, in the beginning, I didn't know how I was going to pay for this because the surgeon that diagnosed me and came in the room and said I had cancer just like it was a flu.
And before
I got insurance, I was scared to death. My chiropractor, the homeopathic chiropractor, Dr. Tozik in Vista. Hi, Dr. Chris, I'm on the radio. Anyway, his father-in-law had a alternative cancer treatment, shark cartilage. Well, being that it was in my esophagus at the top of my stomach, that was ideal for me. I ingested 2 scoops a day. For a month before my insurance kicked in and I qualified for chemotherapy, I was already swallowing at the end of my first week of chemotherapy.
I believe
shark cartilage helped me way before the chemotherapy radiology.
Well, you have to. There's also something, a fact about cancer cells, and every single one of us produces cancer cells every day in our body, and our immune systems knock them right out. Okay. And then there are those of us who become weakened, but for whatever reason, whether it's childhood maltreatment or some other reason, and our immune systems can't do it anymore. And the whole future of cancer treatment is in bolstering the immune system to fight it. And if the pharmaceutical companies could get out of the way, and I'm not saying 100%, we certainly need medications. We certainly need 21st century medications. But it's gotten out of control. And, you know, chemotherapy kills everything, the good and the bad and the ugly. And I have side effects from the chemotherapy. Nobody expected me to live 15 more years. So nobody knows what my life was going to be like now, the quality of my life.
Wow.
So I'm just kicking it along, you know, and going along and just dealing with the symptoms and trying my best. But you have to experiment with whatever you think might work. And, you know, that's the route to wellness, I believe.
And as well as your thoughts, you know, and keeping yourself in a healthy way and not allowing the angry thoughts to overtake your body. And it's okay to feel angry. Angry is a healthy emotion. It's a normal emotion, but it's how we react to the anger.
And I'm still in therapy. I'm not ashamed of it. I need it. You know, I have episodes of depression, and but I know what they are.
Right.
And I know how to deal with them and treat them. And when I need help, I ask for help. And I think that that is the number one takeaway, perhaps, from my book that patients can see. Ask for help. Don't suffer.
That's right.
Don't suffer. You don't need to. And
now, Amy.
Yes.
On that subject, we are almost out of time. We've got about 8 minutes left. So I would like you to tell everyone what is the one thing you learned from all of this.
Oh, boy. It's to trust your instincts.
Okay.
And I knew I was sick. Nobody else wanted to believe me, but I knew I was sick. And one oncologist said to me that 99% of all of this is how you feel. If you feel sick, you're sick.
Right.
If you're feeling good, you're not sick. Okay? And, yes, there are some cancers and there are some things that go undetected and there's no signs and there's no symptoms. Unfortunately, Susan Murphy Milano, she had symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how long she had the symptoms, but she had them for a while. And
there goes my dog. That's right.
And she had a wonderful doctor who I see now, Dr. Dalal Akhoury, also known as Dr. Dolly, at AwareMed
mm-hmm.
Medical Institute in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, who does different kinds of cancer treatments as well as integrative functional medicine. And I'm giving it a try. And I'm not discarding what my traditional specialists or doctors have prescribed to me, and I'm discussing it with those that I trust and work with the best. And
you're on the right path with Dr. Dolly. I will tell you right now, I love her. I love everything that she's teaching everybody. She's
also an MD, and she was a pediatric
mm-hmm.
oncologist, and she still does emergency room rotations. You know, so I feel comfort in that rather than going to a naturopath or a nutritionist, not to knock those at all. Well, when you're a complicated, critically, chronically ill person, you need to seek out the best, the brightest, and get the help you need. So what's the takeaway? There are many different takeaways from the book, depending on what vantage point you're coming to read it from. Even caretakers will benefit from reading it because they'll hear what the patients feel. And they'll
mm-hmm.
read what my husband went through as a caretaker. Doctors will get something from it. I have one of my doctors, a cardiologist, trying to set up a symposium at my local hospital with all the doctors that treated me and the new doctors there where I'm going to speak and talk about, you know, what I went through from my perspective to teach them what they did wrong.
Well, it's a very powerful message, and it needs to be said. They need to be taught.
And what they did right. And what they did right. Yeah, so thank you so much for having me on the show. It was
It was a delight. You are an amazing woman. And
you are an inspiration.
It's an honor.
Well, thank you. And
truly an honor.
I learn from all of you every day, and that's all we can do is keep trying, keep going.
Well, and have faith. You've got to have faith. You've got to believe,
mm-hmm.
and you—it's all within us. We can heal, and it is powerful as all of the negative is out there. The positive is just as powerful, and it's all how we use it. And Amy, it sounds like you're using your passion in such a way that it's going to change the whole medical community as well as the patients out there.
I hope so.
Now, Amy,
yes.
I have a question for you. Today, the switchboard went crazy. Everyone had questions, and I feel like there was a lot that we just didn't really get to thoroughly get into.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be interested in coming back, possibly
next week,
and do a redo?
Yeah. Sure.
A redo or a continuation?
Yeah, a continuation. To be continued next week.
To be continued. Yes. Absolutely.
Would you like to do that, Amy? Oh, great.
Okay, let's do that.
So everyone who's listening, same place, same time, next week. But we've got 3 minutes left, and I want to thank all the callers who called in. I know sometimes I felt like I had to really rush you off, but at that time we thought we had an hour and 4 people in the queue, so I just want to make sure everyone got a chance to talk to Amy. But most of all, I want to thank Amy because it was incredible listening to you and your story, and you are truly an inspiration.
Thank you, and I hope that the book helps many people, and you know, buy one and pass it on.
Yes.
I saw one of your reviews that said that everyone should buy 2 because when you read the first one, you're going to want to give one to another person.
To your doctor, I think they said.
Or to your doctor.
Give one to your doctor, absolutely. And the more doctors we can educate, or up-and-coming doctors we can educate, the better off we're all going to be. Because we're getting old now. We're getting old now.
No, we're not.
So again, you can find Amy's book, Dying to Live, Running Backwards Through Lupus and Cancer and Lupus.
Running Backwards Through Cancer, Lupus, and Chronic Illness.
And Chronic Illness. You can find it at Amazon.com. And please pick it up, and then next week we can all have a discussion about what we've read and what we've learned so far.
Thank you so much, ladies. Yes.
Well, this is great.
Also, check out her blog at dyingtoliveamy.blogspot.com.
And the link is on my website. So, you know, it's all there. So anybody
and you can find Amy Susan Krohn on Facebook as well.
Yes, you can.
I love your new
page. Now we have 1 minute left. So we want to thank the sponsors, Soul Sister Radio, and all the listeners because we couldn't do this without you.
No,
anything
we
you want to add, Tracy?
I just want to say thank you to everybody for joining us and being a part of this. I believe everybody together has a voice, and we can speak loud and clear, and we can make a difference. So thank you again, everybody, for joining us today. Amy, we'll see you next week.
Great. Just give me the details when you have a chance, okay?
All right. We'll be same place, same time, same number.
Okay. That's it.
8 o'clock
I need
your
to know.
Time.
Okay, I'll make sure I'm not racing home from New Jersey like I was. Are there 30 seconds left by any chance, or that's it?
Oh, we got 20 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay, I just want to say that I was coming today from driving my niece's husband home from Kessler Rehabilitation Institute in New Jersey. He had an almost paralyzing accident 8 weeks ago.
Oh, boy.
And if it weren't for the skilled hands of doctors, he would not be walking. And he is walking, and it was my turn today to drive him home, and I was honored to do it, and everybody's situation is different, and I send out my great love to that family who's doing a remarkable job in the face of tremendous adversity.
Well, they have all of our prayers as well,
yes.
And we'll be thinking of him and his recovery.
I just wanted to point out that, you know, even in my condition, yesterday I slept 3 hours for the day, in the middle of the day. I felt that it was so very important for me to see him and be there today, and I was so happy to do it.
Wow, that's really special. And passing on. Paying it forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, helping others really helps yourself, too. It really does.
That's right. That's right. Well,
okay.
Thank you again. All right,
thanks,
everybody.
Ladies.
Well,
good night.
See you next week. Thank you first. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Soul Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the... Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, You Decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support. Soul Sister Radio.